You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
We live in a society in which sexual harassment is rife. We do not know what the true stats are because when it comes to sexual harassment, there's a lot of underreporting. And there's a lot of underreporting because women and girls are too scared to speak out. We doubt them. We shame them. We don't believe them. And there's no prospects of justice in a broken criminal justice system that can often be very harsh. This happens at home. It happens in universities. It happens in public spaces. And of course, it also happens in the workplace. We were contacted by a now former director of Grant Thornton South Africa, Narisha Singh, who asked us whether we want to hear her story and be entrusted with her story of sexual harassment in the workplace and the story that she tells of someone that was meant to be her boss who just behaved absolutely horrifically. And the story gets worse because it is also a story of a conspiracy of institutional silence in terms of a lack of duty of care on the part of Grant Thornton South Africa. And yesterday we pre-recorded the story, and I'm glad that we did so. I don't think I would have been able to handle that conversation with Narisha Singh live on air. And I must say that this comes with a warning. Anyone who has experienced sexual harassment, be it in the workplace or elsewhere in society, may find this very difficult listening that we are about to play for you. It's an important story for all sorts of reasons, but there are at least two that I want to highlight. The first reason why the story is incredibly important is because we sometimes think that professional women are unrapable, professional women are not capable of being harassed, professional women surely are strong enough to withstand a range of different forms of abuse at home or at work, and it is not true. All women can be and are subject to the violations that us men perpetrate on them. So for me, that's one reason why it's important. The second reason why the story is important is because it is a demonstration as well that the vast majority of instances of sexual harassment do not involve horrific physical attacks on women. And there is that gray area, quote unquote, which when it adds up, does amount to sexual harassment, but often women don't know whether that is what you've truly experienced. You doubt yourself. We reached out to Grant Thornton South Africa. They're going to listen to this story that Narisha Singh will now tell as a former director of the company. And we have given them the right of reply should they wish to come on tomorrow. But this is Narisha's story, most narrated in her own voice.
It's been quite a traumatic experience, Eusebius. And when the disciplinary process was over, and I remember going to the office the next day feeling a sense of relief that we no longer, or that I no longer had to deal with the trauma of this perpetrator in my work environment, in my personal space. On the 21st of November, the deputy CEO came to me and said, Narisha, please will you stay on? It was a sense of relief as well. But my immediate reaction to her was, I need to speak to my family. I need to speak to my partner because I've been through something quite traumatic. I want to discuss it with them first and I'll come back to you. She gave me until that afternoon because we had another important project or engagement that was starting the next day. And so I did. I called my parents, I called my partner, and I said, this is what's happening. And both my partner and my parents said, stay if you feel safe. And that meant a lot to me. Remember, at some point, I also made the decision to choose Grant Thornton as my employer of choice, that this was going to be the place where I was going to ply my trade as a forensics specialist. So I accepted the offer, or I accepted the what I then saw as a retraction of my resignation. Only to find out at the end of January, when I had taken some bursary forms to get signed off by the acting head of forensics and later to the deputy CEO, that the intention was only for me to stay on for 3 months. This was around the third week, perhaps the last week of January.
Of this year.
Of 2018. I was completely surprised. It came as quite a shock to me, especially when I had also brought on a new client. A major multimedia company had called me in December to say, please, can you come on board and help us with this high-profile investigation? And I actually said to the head of internal audit who had called me, I said, are you aware that I'm no longer with the Big Four company? And they said, yes, we are, Nirisha, but we need you. So I got the necessary approvals. And I remember for the first 3 weeks of January, I probably worked 172 hours. It was a massive deadline to get this report out. Through this process, one thing that has not left me was my high standards of work ethic, integrity, the level of professionalism with which I conducted myself, despite the severe trauma that I was experiencing internally as a female in this work environment.
So when you then discover that the retraction of your resignation was not meant to apply until some unspecified future time when you may or may not mutually decide to leave the company, and that it was meant to now only be 3 months, who did you approach to express your surprise and to get clarity on, well, I thought we had now agreed that the alleged perpetrator, who, in your wording, absconded from the process, and after doing so, the process was inconclusive, is no longer in the building. So presumably we could re-nurture my relationship with Grant Thornton South Africa. Who did you ask for clarity on why am I only going to be around for another 3 months then?
I absolutely did so, Yesibius, because I now had to worry about my future. And in fact, on the 21st of November, it was also a sense of relief for me because I went away from the conversation with the CEO thinking that they've done the right thing. They've now restored me to the permanent position I was in before the sexual harassment and harassment.
Okay.
At that point, at the end of January 2018, the CEO said that she will speak to me in 2 weeks' time.
The deputy CEO.
The deputy CEO. In those 2 weeks, the acting head of forensics came to me and said, Nirisha, why don't you consider staying on for another 3 months until you find something else? And my reaction was absolutely not. If Grant Thornton won't restore me back to my permanent position, I am going to proceed with constructive dismissal and also the case for sexual harassment, and now discrimination. I knew that he would take this message to the deputy CEO, which he did. The deputy CEO called me to a meeting on the 23rd of February. And she said to me, I recall her opening words were, it's not good news for you. You can stay until the end of March. We are now letting you go. And she said the main reason for letting me go was because of my attitude in asserting my labor law rights.
Wow.
She then went on to say to me, but Nirisha, you're a black female. You can get a job anywhere.
That is shocking.
She also said to me that the directors upstairs, so I'm assuming the rest of the advisory leadership, took unfavorable view of me since my complaints of sexual harassment and And I said to her, Julian, this is shocking. I said, I have been a victim here, but you are treating me as if I am the perpetrator.
And at no point in this conversation that happened recently do they cast aspersions on your capacity to do the job.
None whatsoever.
She actually said to you, your assertion of your labor rights is what had caused unhappiness amongst leadership.
And that it was undirector-like behavior.
Wow.
You know, we talk about secondary victimization. The experience of sexual harassment and harassment was very traumatic for me, on my family, on my partner. But to now go through this, to now be re-victimized, you know, as we common terminology, secondary victimization, because I was a complainant.
What did you say to her? What does one say? Yes, someone. The fact that she's a woman should be neither here nor there, but here is a senior leader in the company who has the audacity of telling you that
an assertion of your labor rights is undirect-like. I wouldn't apply to work at Grant Thornton if I'm listening to this conversation on radio. And then to add insult to injury, oh, by the way, as a black woman, at any rate, the market is all yours, so you'll be all right. I mean, that kind of subtext. How did you feel?
Humiliated. I really had to hold back the tears. I was determined not to cry in front of her. And at one point, I ended the conversation and I said, Julian, this is now going to become a she said, she said. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to resolve this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because she also encouraged me not to take the process further.
Wow.
Not to, the words that she used was, think of the goodwill, you know, if you just leave quietly.
What do you want now?
I, at all times in the process, from my resignation on the 8th of October 2017, I just wanted to be restored to the position, or to the permanent position that I was in before the sexual harassment. That's all I wanted. It was also completely lost on leadership that my last day of work was going to be the 8th of March 2018. Because I said to her, if you count 3 months from the 8th of December, which should have been my original last day of work, then 8th of March 2018 would be my last day. Up until that point, I was also hoping that they would change their minds, because once the perpetrator had absconded and was no longer part of the business, I also saw this as an opportunity to hit the reset button, you know, to now truly show Grant Thornton and the leadership what I was capable of.
But you're caught between a rock and a hard place now, right? And some listeners listening to this conversation will be a little bit confused what happened, and I beg your patience, because we will backtrack in a second. I'm starting in a sense with where we are at now with the experiences of Narisha Singh. You're a lawyer by training. The law is a blunt instrument to deal with organizational cultural failure. Even if, unlikely, the leadership realizes when listening to this conversation right now, if they've been alerted, if they're not habitual listeners, it's no point calling Norton Rose or some fancy legal firm to deal with Narisha.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they will see sense and decide, dash it, we need to recalibrate in non-legal terms what our values are as Grant Thornton South Africa, and have another conversation with you. You and I know, you studied more law than me, that it will be a Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah.
You win the battle, but you may lose the war, because you're going to go into an organization where, even if they promise you that there can be a restorative process, that it's been sullied completely. Would you want to go back there, even if they called you after this interview?
Yeah. So you see, there's been further developments. My last day of work was the 8th of March. Up until that point, I also realized how isolated the business had made me feel.
Mm.
In fact, I felt ostracized on a daily basis because none of the other directors engaged me. In fact, throughout this incident, not one of the leadership ever came to me and said, Narisha, we're really sorry that you went through this. How are you coping? Are you okay? Not one. On the 8th of March, not even HR called me to complete any exit processes. The only call I got the day before was a call from Brenda from IT to tell me that when I'm leaving, I need to bring my access card and PC to her. I left humiliated, and I was determined to fight this. Mm. On the 9th of March, I went to the CCMA in Johannesburg City. I reached there about 8 a.m. It took me about 7 hours, but I registered 2 cases. One of constructive dismissal, the other of sexual harassment, and discrimination. Because now I was determined to hold the company accountable for the secondary victimization that I had suffered. Okay. The only thing that had changed was my complaint. The Monday, 12th of March 2018, I went to the Commission for Gender Equality, and I also registered a case with them. Since then, the CCMA has contacted both myself as the applicant and Grant Thornton as a respondent. The first case will be held on the 4th of April.
Mm-hmm.
The second will be held on the 5th of April.
Mm.
On Friday last week, so the date escapes me now, but Grant Thornton got their appointed service provider, LabourNet, to send a notice of objection to the conciliation arbitration process. So what this means is that in the typical complaint to the CCMA, conciliation takes place first. In the event that there's no agreement in conciliation, then arbitration immediately takes place. But Grant Thornton, in my view, we're now applying a delaying tactic.
Mm.
Perhaps they're hoping that I would eventually desert the process.
Okay, so in your version, they're being adversarial, there's no goodwill, and so it probably isn't an environment into which you can go back into.
Then this morning, around 10:34 a.m., I get a call from Serena Ho, the audit partner I'd mentioned. I couldn't take a call at the time. She left a voicemail saying that, Narisha, the leadership have met last week and we've decided to offer you your job back.
Full time. This is now Monday morning, the 26th.
The 26th of mm-hmm. March, correct. I then got an email from her about an hour later, perhaps less than an hour later, with an offer of employment. Serena had also invited me to a coffee meeting with her on the 15th of March at Sandton City. And she said, Narisha, what if the leadership offered you your job back? And I said, Serena, I cannot do it. I said, the values of Grant Thornton is not something that I can relate to.
Okay.
I also cannot come back to an organization that I cannot trust.
Mm.
Because you may gladly take me back, but I'll be constantly looking over my shoulder, wondering if somebody's going to sabotage me.
That makes sense.
If somebody is going to do something and then later pin something on me. I'm not prepared to come into an environment like that.
Narisha, I want to step back here. I was saying to my colleague Megan, you know, what is simultaneously difficult, but also exceptionally instructive about the experience that you have had at Grant Thornton is that I think the majority of women in this country and the world over who are survivors of sexual harassment are more likely to identify with your experience than with an experience where a woman is brutally physically attacked. And it's difficult and instructive at the same time. It's instructive insofar as many women doubt whether they are genuinely, from a moral and a legal point of view, victims of sexual harassment if they don't have physical scars on them. And yet at the same time, it also goes into that, not in my mind, but let's be honest, many of the public's mind, the gray area.
Mm.
The gray area where you think maybe someone that Narisha thinks was preying on her was just being chivalrous. Who was this person that did this to you? What was his position? And talk us through the red flags that only with the benefit of hindsight you could see as a pattern of experiences.
Mm. So you see, the perpetrator in this instance was the head of forensics and my immediate boss. In fact, he'd interviewed me together with Julian. And I'd also attended a separate interview with the CEO, Paul Badrick, as well.
Are you comfortable naming him, or is that not salient for you?
I don't have an issue in naming him. I suppose it's also part of the healing process as well. And I think I will do so in the course of our conversation. I actually want to go back at this point, if you would allow me, back to my conversation with the deputy CEO on the 23rd of February, when she told me that my employment was being terminated. She also said to me, but Vernon in the interview when I was there with him said to you that I am difficult. And my immediate response to her was, how can that be construed as consent to sexual harassment and harassment? She even said to me, will you even be able to prove a case of harassment? And I sat there shocked Eusebius, because just 4 months ago, she was going to use my testimony, both verbal and through my written statement, as the company representative to present charges of sexual harassment and harassment against the perpetrator. And now here we are 4 months later. Will you actually be able to prove harassment? The shocking diminished view of my experience also added to the anxiety, the re-victimization, sure, as I saw it as well.
What was the first incident?
I joined Grant Thornton on the 1st of April, 2017. It was a very exciting moment for me and also my family as well to join a firm at a director level. And in fact, I think I may have been one of a few handful of black female directors in the forensics profession in South Africa at the time. In my third month in July, I remember my parents were visiting me from Durban and I'd invited them to the office just before we went out for lunch. And I really wanted them to meet my boss, but he was not at the office. So they happened to meet a senior audit partner. And being from Durban as well, you know, we had some shared stories. The next day, this audit partner invited me out for a coffee to our office canteen, which I easily joined. I didn't have any inclination that something might be untoward. Grabbed a coffee, sat down. I remember sitting with this hot cup of black coffee in front of me. Barely a few seconds into the conversation, he looks me directly in the eye and he says, "Now that I met your parents, can I take you away for the weekend?" I literally froze. I couldn't believe the audacity, the brazenness, the boldness of such an approach from a married man, if that adds any moral value or aspersions on this gentleman. And when I look back, I think that was the first serious red flag that alerted me to the culture at Grant Thornton, and that certain things were not
But you
right.
didn't see it for that at the time, right? Presumably there must be lots of doubt. This is how some oaks speak.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just very friendly. How do I distinguish a bad motive from chivalry or even just banter?
I think this was...
But then it presumably adds up over time.
It does. I think for me, this was far from chivalry or banter.
Mm.
I was in no way flattered.
Mm.
I immediately froze. I had no idea how to deal with this, in fact. And I recall at the time, I think I simply changed the conversation and excused myself from the canteen as quickly as possible.
Mm.
I probably made up something that I needed to do in terms of client work or client deadlines. Not even 2 to 3 weeks later, my very own boss, the head of forensics, and I recall this day quite specifically because there was a fire alarm at Grant Thornton and we were all standing out in the corridor. And out of the blue, he says to me, "So what's your relationship status? Why aren't you married? Aren't your parents worried about you not being married?" Now, one of the things that I was quite deliberate about before I got to Grant Thornton, it's a discussion that I had with my partner, was that I was not going to declare my sexuality in terms of being a gay female in a professional environment. I learned through my previous job experience that it was career limiting. And at this point, I also want to say, Eusebius, that I'm not ashamed of being gay. It's been quite a journey for me. And when I eventually did come out to my parents, I found great support from them, from my siblings, and from my extended family. My partner and I, who happens to be a Korean South African, have been together for 8 years now. But specifically in the professional context, I found that being an out and proud professional forensics specialist limited my career. I wouldn't lie about who I am, but when, as my boss did, ask me about my relationship and why aren't you married? I just merely responded that it's complicated.
Mm.
He also had quite a temper, and I was afraid that if I did come out to him, how he'd react.
Okay.
That if I said something that would have upset his ego, there would have been severe repercussions for me.
Mm. You have, I noticed that you've brought jewelry with to this conversation.
Mm.
Where does that come from?
So, Eusebius, not long after that initial conversation about my relationship status from my boss, this now takes us from July to the period of the 20th to the 26th of August 2017. My boss was actually in Zambia for a specific engagement, and he started sending me these, what I considered highly inappropriate, text messages. And in fact, if you'll allow me, I'd like to read a section of my statement.
Okay.
That just speaks to the nature of these messages. Under the heading General Conduct, included in the exchange of text messages were repeated inappropriate inferences and references to alcohol. Whether or not I was going to have alcohol, or if I wanted alcohol, to which he was willing to get for me. At all times during this exchange, I maintained a level of professionalism and tried my best to deflect from this line of inappropriate conversation by referring back to work-related issues. I include in the statement a screenshot of every text message received and sent between Vernon and I between the periods. It must be stressed, at no time did I ever request a gift, be it alcohol or any other gift, from anyone during this time and at any other time during my employment at Grant Thornton.
Okay.
My worst fears were realized, because in this exchange of messages, I had said to my partner, I think that Vernon is flirting with me, and I don't know what to do. And my worst fears were then realized on Monday, the 28th of August, probably between about 3 and 5 p.m., Vernon came to the office and asked me to meet him in a boardroom where we were going to interview the MD of a particular company that had engaged us for forensic services. After the interview, Vernon walked the gentleman out and came back into the boardroom. By now, I think most of the staff at Grant Thornton had left, and my immediate reaction was to start talking about the interview and the outcome and what was going to be our next investigation steps. He puts his hand into his laptop bag, pulls out this red bag, and puts it in front of me. I literally froze. He said to me, I noticed that you wear a gold necklace, which does not match the rest of your jewelry.
Wow.
And as you can see, Eusebius, I do wear a gold necklace. Mm. But for those who are close to me know the special story of my mother gifting this to me before I left for overseas, which I've worn every day for the last 12 years. And he said that he was at the airport, he saw this, and he knew that he had to immediately get it for me. In that moment, I felt highly uncomfortable, because I also realized that he had noticed intimate things about me, that he was looking at me, that he was looking at my neck, my body, and it made me highly uncomfortable. But here I was, stuck in this boardroom with a boss that I would later realize is highly volatile and probably little to no staff around.
So what do you say about this gift?
In that split second as well, I had to consider the ramifications of saying no and what that would mean for me. I realized that if I said no, again, it's a split second reaction and a gut, that if I said no, if I rejected this gift, I was going to have to deal with his rage.
Do you think at this point to yourself, I'm a victim of sexual predation, sexual harassment?
I thought that immediately.
Okay.
Because when you look at the gift, it's highly inappropriate. It's not a gift of one that says, I was at the airport, I saw this mug, and I know how much you love coffee.
Okay.
For me, it's a necklace. Mm. It's a white gold necklace with a diamante placement. All I can think of is that it's with intent to impress me, with intent to show some sort of...
Were you scared?
I was, absolutely.
So what happens? You leave the boardroom. What's the feeling?
The feeling was, I'm going to say thank you, and I'm going to walk away as quickly as I can. I think he probably did notice the sense of nervousness in my face, the anxiety perhaps.
Mm. Why didn't you give it back to him, throw it at him?
I was scared, Eusebius. Mm. I was absolutely scared about what my working life would be like if I said, I cannot accept this gift.
And how did in the moments after that, how did he behave?
So we eventually managed to get out of the boardroom, or I managed to get us out. Mm. We were walking down a very narrow corridor, and I thought that getting the gift was the most difficult moment of my life. But he then took his arm and elbow locked me around my neck. I was absolutely petrified. I could not move. I kept thinking, oh my God, what if he tries to kiss me? I don't know what he was thinking, but perhaps he was thinking, okay, you know, maybe the gift didn't quite work, but if I touch her, then she might realize that I will be swept off my feet or something. But I was absolutely petrified. And I was in this elbow lock for at least 15 to 20 seconds, but it felt forever.
Wow.
I could not get out of it. Eventually, when we reached a point when we both had to go separate ways, he let go of the lock.
I've just got three more questions I want to ask you. The one is, I can't presume anything about how this plays out, but at some point, maybe you found courage to tell someone else, another employer, another colleague, maybe. I mean, you're in a position of, what was your title?
I was director of forensics.
So you're a director in this company, right? Mm-hmm. And when you told, who was the first person, if anyone, that you told, and what did they share with you, or how did they respond?
So outside of my family, my parents and my partner, the first person I confided in was a former colleague. And I recall that weekend as if it were yesterday, because of the trauma, the psychological impact that it had on me. And in fact, you know, we talk about physical scars. CBS, through December, January, and February this year, the nightmares have not left me. I wake up screaming because I have this fear of being attacked, of being chased, of this perpetrator wanting revenge on me for coming forward with this complaint. So we were working, the team and I were working late hours. We had a massive deadline for one of our public sector clients. We were under tremendous pressure. But between 28th of August and this weekend of the 6th of October 2017, I had suffered intense rage that just did not prepare me for the rejection that this man was unable to deal with. And I couldn't take it anymore. And I said to my colleague, I think that Vernon is treating me badly because I rejected his sexual advances. And he'd given me this gift. And I told her about the necklace. You see, I could not have anticipated her response. She said to me, I also have something to tell you. This has also happened to me. He has also given me expensive gifts. And I've also had to deal with the rage after rejecting him. I was, perhaps the polite word or the polite phrase is, swept for a six. I couldn't believe it. And I realized that I was one of two victims.
At least.
And they were starting to now develop a pattern of predatory behavior against women.
You shared some of the documentation with me. Is this the point at which you go to the deputy CEO of Grant Thornton South Africa and another revelation comes out in terms of pattern of behavior?
Correct. That's 6th of October 7th of October, Sunday the 8th of October, the behavior had gotten so abusive. The rage was unrelenting. You see, it's that I reached a point where I realized that I had no choice but to resign. And I duly sent my resignation to the perpetrator and to the deputy CEO of Grant Thornton. On Monday morning, my resignation was accepted by the perpetrator. I did not give details as to why I was resigning because I had every intention to relay to the deputy CEO what had happened. She met with me later that afternoon. And I don't know if you recall at the time in October, but there were a hell of a storms in Joburg at the time. And I remember the rain and the thunder and lightning was pounding on our office roof for between 4 and 6 p.m. And we sat in a boardroom that does not have any privacy screens. And I was absolutely scared to take out this necklace because I was so afraid Vernon was going to be walking past. And what if he saw me? That fear that if he knew I was telling somebody what I would have had to deal with. But in the course of an almost two-hour conversation with the deputy CEO, she then alerted me to the fact that, and I'd also said to her, relayed to her what victim number one had gone through. And she said to me that we were not the only ones, that there were other women before us. And later on, when the anger set in, leadership knew. They knew, and they saw my colleague and I come into this department as new employees, and they did nothing to protect us.
I'm gobsmacked. Just a very quick last minute question, because what I'm hearing from you is the story of you see an opportunity, you're a highly sought after professional. My memory of first encountering you, because although we're not friends, we've met before, is as a feisty, sporty, which is why she uses the analogy of being swept for six, cricket-loving, brilliant student, making her way to Oxford University, Exeter College, on a bicycle, and that's my enduring memory of you. I would never have thought that years later we would sit across each other, me as a talk show host and you as a survivor of predation. I would have thought the next time I speak to you, it would be wearing your hat as a brilliant South African lawyer who's highly competitive and driven and passionate, and we would be engaging on substantive issues of national importance. This is of national importance, but not quite in the way in which I could have predicted in my memory in the mid-noughties of you at Oxford University, and here you are employed. But you entered this organization thinking this is a career path for someone who can be a director in a more inclusive organization, better than the one that you had left in terms of its gender politics. And you've been led down by the company, by the deputy CEO of Grant Thornton South Africa, who herself is a woman, who confirms that the predator has a pattern of behavior that preceded him, apologizes for not being able to protect you or not being willing, certainly able. And then on a parting shot tells you, oh, well, your identity makes you sought after in the South African context as a black woman, as highly qualified as you are, with your experience in forensics and in law. There's no happy ending to this story, so we can't end it on a perfect cadence. All I want you to articulate from me at this point in 30 seconds or so that's left is what you feel right now.
Devastated. Heartbroken. You see, I absolutely love what I do. I'm very passionate about what I do. And in my own small way, as a forensic specialist, I feel like I make a difference to South African society by holding those accountable, especially those who perpetrate fraud and theft around on major organizations, including the public sector, who have been many of my clients. The added humiliation for me is that I was once marked to be the next head of forensics, or at the very least, the acting head of forensics. And again, it would have certainly been a feather in my cap to be recognized for my professional competence, for my technical proficiency, and for my forensic capabilities. After I became a complainant of sexual harassment and harassment, I was then told that I would be reporting to a white male who was brought in to the role as acting head of forensics, who has no professional qualifications and no experience. Eusebius, I have four variations of law degrees, from a master's in law to a master's in criminology, the last two of which came from Cambridge and Oxford. I'm a certified fraud examiner. I'm a certified anti-money laundering specialist. I have more than a decade's experience in forensic investigations, and high-profile ones at that. After I'd become a complainant of sexual harassment and harassment, I now had to report to an inexperienced and unqualified male counterpart. And we talk about, you know, secondary victimization, that when we encourage women, come forward, it's important that you do. I thought it was important and that the company would recognize my pain.
Sure.
But I was not prepared for the secondary victimization.
We're going to leave it there, Narisha, on a very jarring note. I don't know what the future holds for you. This is no country for women, let alone black women, let alone black gay women. And that is with four law degrees, including from Oxford and Cambridge. All the best to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Eusebius.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
You know, obviously we pre-recorded that yesterday, and I'm listening to that for the fourth time, and it doesn't get easier, does it? It doesn't get easier. It was hard hearing Narisha Singh as a director going through that. I'm not saying that directors can't be victims, but the point is precisely that we have this thing in society where we think some women are too powerful to be victims or potential victims and survivors. And of course, that's BS. So I heard her yesterday. I listened back to it twice last night at home. And now with you, I listened to it again as we brought you that pre-recorded broadcast in the last hour. And this woman is now without a job. I know she's not desperate for a job. They made an offer yesterday morning, Monday morning, and she's not going back because the place is toxic. She's not the only one. Just in this last hour, we've had at least two women who've worked at Grant Thornton saying to us that they also want to tell their story of that organization. And we know this is not restricted to Grant Thornton. The reason why many of you are triggered, some of you are telling us your story on my Twitter timeline, is because this is the reality of our country. It's not restricted to corporate. It happens in our homes. It happens in our schools, universities, even civil society organizations. And, I don't know what to say. Let's play a little bit of Tracy Chapman. We certainly live in a country where a woman is not safe when she's in her home. She's not safe in the public space. And she's also not safe in the boardroom.